Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Hey folks, this is Kevin. Just a few words before we start. This Friday, February 10th, RISC is live at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. We have the extraordinary W. Kamau Bell, brilliant comedian, and we are thrilled to finally have achieved his coming onto the show. And we will also have four Wesleyan students telling remarkable stories of their own at the show, as well as yours truly. There'll be live music. It's just an event you are not going to want to miss. If you're anywhere near Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut, this Friday, February 10th, go to risk-show.com/tour for more information. And remember the ridiculously good bargain we have with AdamandEve.com, folks. If you need condoms or lube or toys or lingerie or DVDs, it's ridiculous not to take advantage of this offer that so many RISC fans have thanked us for. Listen, you go to AdamandEve.com, you type in the offer code RISK at the checkout, you get 50% off just about any item, 3 free adult DVDs, free shipping, and an extra surprise. That's AdamandEve.com. The offer code is RISK. Now here's the show. Kids, this is RISC, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is the Freak Fandango Orchestra behind me now. I'll tell you, folks, we had such a blast, such a crazy blast in San Francisco doing our live shows at Sketchfest this past weekend. We're just going to make this show four stories from those live shows. You're going to hear how much fun we're having at Risk live shows lately. It is worth spreading the word. And that's why it's worth participating in that Twitter campaign I was talking about last week. If you tweet to Rolling Stone, at Rolling Stone, to Entertainment Weekly, at EW, and to the New York Times, at NYT underscore arts, tell them about Risk. Tell them about our URL, risk-show.com, and include the hashtag Review Risk. Well, I'll tell you, we noticed a lot of the stories last weekend were about things that were out of place or people that were out of place. So we called this episode Out of Place. Our first story comes from the lovely and talented Nikki Glaser. She's at NikkiGlazerComedy.com. We got the title for this one off a box of Cracker Jacks. We call it Surprise Inside.
January 17th, 2009, the day that Sully landed that plane in the Hudson. So I want you to picture what you were doing that day. And this is what I was doing that day. I had just started seeing this guy. I got my first boyfriend that night. We had just established it on a bench outside a hotel. We were both living with our parents at the time. So we had to meet up at hotels like we were cheating on our family. And so we were smoking a cigarette on a bench, and we were like, we're going to be boyfriend, girlfriend. I was like, I have my first boyfriend. We went inside to seal the deal. I remember he's giving me a real good Rogering, and in the middle of it, which I love that phrasing, by the way, good Rogering. It sounds like classy, which it wasn't. It was real gross, but it sounds like he might have bought me flowers or something, which he definitely didn't, but he was a jerk. But point aside, at one point during it, He seems bothered, and I remember he goes, what is that? Like, something that's been bothering him a long time. First time I heard of this. He goes, what is that? And I'm like, what? And he's like, there's something scraping my dick. And I haven't heard that since the last time I gave a blowjob. So I have huge teeth. I'm not good at them. nuts. And I was, of course, really offended. Like, what the fuck are you talking? He's like, do you have something in there? I'm like, no. He's like, do you have, like, a diaphragm? I'm like, I don't wear a fucking diaphragm. Who? My ancestors wore diaphragms. Diaphragms, like, the shoulder pads of birth control. Like, it's popular in the 80s, but I'm not wearing a diaphragm. IUD. So I was like, no, I don't know what it is. But you thinking I have a diaphragm in, it maybe explains why we're having condomless sex way too early. I don't even know how that happened. I think he had a really good argument. Like, I was like, I don't think I'm ready. But he was like, come on. And, I was like, good point. So I'm like, I don't know. What are you talking about? He goes, babe, feel. He called me babe because of the movie. But that was... he was such a jerk. I hate this guy. But anyway, so I at the time I'm like so in love and I'm freaked out and he goes feel and I reach up and it scrapes my finger. It felt like a fucking tooth or something. I was like, what the fuck? And I started crying instantly. Like I'm not like a like. He was like, do you put shit up there? I was like, I know. I don't even wear tampons. So that's not true. That's gross. I wore pads. No, but I don't know. I was like, what is it? Like, it was so scary. Of course, I couldn't reach it. It was so far up that I was like, you need to get this for me. Because he had very long fingers. So he plied it out. And guys, it was something I had never seen before. It was what I can only describe. It looks exactly like a chapstick cap. It's exactly that size, like, you know, like the classic chapstick, but it was light blue, so it looked kind of medical, and I was like, I've never seen this thing before in my life, and he's like, I don't, like, he just thinks I'm putting shit up there for shits and giggles, like, that's what I'm into. I don't know who would be into that. So I'm freaking out and I'm trying to promise it. Like, I swear I didn't put anything up there. And he's just like, whatever. And he got over it. And eventually I convinced him, like, I guess it was something that a doctor left in me. I mean, that's the only thing that I can think of. And I kind of moved past it. I told a couple people and they said, you know, you should sue. Did you suffer? I was like, I didn't suffer from, you know, it was really embarrassing when he found it. And yeah, he could have broken up with me or whatever, but that didn't happen. And sure, there were a couple yeast infections the past couple months, but I just chalked that wasn't really, that's no, don't act like you've never had them, guys. So I was just like that. I didn't really start. So I called a lawyer. This happened in Los Angeles. I figured the doctor was in Los Angeles. I was living in St. Louis at the time. And he said, well, you didn't really suffer. There's nothing really. We don't have a case here. And so I was like, okay, that's fine. It's just a good story I'll tell someday on a podcast. And like, I knew I would tell it. Podcasts weren't even around back then, but I knew. Or at least maybe they were. But so I forgot about it. I just kind of let it go. And then one day I was online and I was like, I remembered it because I kept it in a drawer. I held on to it. I forgot to bring it here. I still have it. It's traveled with me, almost like a good luck charm. I didn't stay with that boyfriend, but I was planning on our anniversary to string it on like a hemp necklace and give it to him. I might still do it, but so I still have it. I was gonna bring. I wish I would have it for you guys, but to pass around like the worst show and tell ever. I disinfected it, but. So I came across it in a drawer, and I was like, I should Google. So I looked up. I was trying to find maybe anyone else this has happened to or what it could be. So I typed into Google. This took, you know, a really long time to figure out how to Google this right, but I put it into quotes. I put in, found in my vagina. It was in quotes. This is how I found it. Like, this is like the weirdest Ask Jeeves search from 96. Like, what is this blue cap? And then a blue cap on its own. So that's how you would get this if you want to try it yourselves. So this, I Googled it and turned out there's a girl that posted on some kind of message board, freaked out, like, has anyone else found a weird blue cap in their vagina? I swear to God. So I am like, oh my God, I freaked out. I emailed her right away. She lives in Des Moines. I wrote her. And by the way, I was going to Des Moines the next day to do stand-up at the Funny Bone. And so I wrote her this whole email, like, I'm with you on this. Like, I found one in my vagina, too. I don't know what's going on. By the way, I'm coming to the Funny Bone this weekend. Like, if you want tickets or whatever. And so she wrote me back, and I was just like, I can't believe, like, what do you think it is? And she wrote me back, and she was like, this is a fucking conspiracy. She's like, I think they put cameras in there, and we need to, like, she thought it was, like, she wanted to track down the doctors who did it. She thought it was, like, which I did not think it was, and she was like, are you kidding me? You think that we just ended up with these two things up our vaginas just out of nowhere? Like, there's not someone behind this? And I was like, I went to a free clinic in Glendale. Like, I don't think these doctors, the woman didn't even, like, there's no way that this was a conspiracy. So I kind of brought, and she didn't come to my show in Des Moines. She probably thought that was a conspiracy. She was, like, really into, like, that was how I drum up people to come to my shows. Just Googling people who found stuff in their body. Like, the worst street team ever. Assembling. So she never even returned my, like, well, first of all, let me say this. She didn't believe me at first. She was just like, what are you, like, because I was like, I found the blue cap too. I see your pictures. It's the same thing. She was like, well, I need to see your pictures too. Like, show me. So I had to, like, take a picture of, and I remember she was like, make sure, like, you date it next to it. So I had to, like, write the date next to prove that it was, like, really the thing. So I, like, I still have pictures in my phone of it. I'll show you if you want to see after the show. But, So I didn't hear from her, and I kept on, held on to the thing, and that was where the story should have ended until, like, that's where it was ending until a couple days ago when I decided to Google it again and be like, is there someone else that came out? And there is. I did the same Google search again, and since that date, another person has found the blue cap in their vagina. And I just always thought it was like a piece of, like, I had an HPV test, and it was like they put in a thing, and there was like a cap on a vial, and instead of plugging it, it just, the cap fell off or something like that. So that's always what I assumed. But this girl, the third person that I found the other day, figured out what it was, and it was certainly my fault. It's a part of the applicator to a Monistat 7 that I definitely did it to myself. And which I was okay with, because I was okay with this the whole time, but I was really excited to send this to this girl in Des Moines. I instantly forwarded it and wrote in the subject, conspiracy. And then made a link and I go, I think you should check this out. Tiniest conspiracy ever. Because I know what she's thinking, because it is a conspiracy. You use the Monistat, you put it up in your, in a cap is inserted, and then it causes yeast infections. And guess where you gotta go? Right back to Monistats. So that is my story. Thank you very much for sharing.
La questa casca ningo pagava. E c'era un portuso in the roof in go palla. E metto bella ca. Ehi, la questa casca ningo pagava. Mi stai bagnando. She did so land the Lord, so that's it is watch him.
Dear God in heaven, that is certainly out of place. That is yet another LP that my editor Jeff Barr reached deep, deep down into someone's trash, rooting around like a rat in a sewer, pulling out private property, sopping with garbage juice. Our next story comes to us from the brilliant Ben Grant, a dear friend of mine from the state. You also know him as Travis Jr. from Reno 911. I've always felt that Ben is one of the most talented people I've ever known. Here he is, kind of getting back to his country roots with a story we call What Stays in Casper.
So I'm a writer mostly, and about like 3 or 4 years ago, I got kind of sucked into doing writing workshops, which is, it's fun because you sit around and you hear people's stories, people under the context of they're trying to put together a screenplay, like really open up and like say they're either it's autobiographical or it's something that they think is the best idea in the world, and it's fun, like people in this weird little rooms like really kind of get very honest and talk about themselves, and it's neat. I did one at the CIA at Langley. There was a writing workshop with, they have a group there called Invisible Ink. That's the CIA agents whose hobby is writing. And somehow, through the CIA, I got an invitation to do a screenwriting workshop for the Cowboy Writers Association of Wyoming. And so I said, fucking, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll do it. Because it's weird. And I like going and doing weird things and meeting people I never would have met. So I go to Casper, Wyoming. And in Casper, Wyoming, it's like the eastern side of Wyoming, and there's nothing. It's not mountains. It's not like Yellowstone. It's just flat. And so you drive, and there's just like fucking nothing. And like, and I go to, and they put me up in a Holiday Inn, and then I go and do this workshop. And I'm there at the workshop, and it's like maybe 30 people, and they're old like cowboys. And like most of them were like 60 and 70. And I think that if I had been talking about anything, they would have shown up. Like if I was talking about origami or the time I got picked up by a UFO. Like I think they would have come because they were just there to see something. Because they're in Casper, Wyoming. And like and they all look like fucking cowboys. And so, you know, and I'm like, and I start and I say, so what do people wanna, what are questions that you guys have? And they're silent, and they look at each other. And then, like, this big kind of Wilford Brimley guy in the back stands up and says, formatting software. Like, okay, yeah, Final Draft. Here's Final Draft. Here's the website. It's great. You'll love it. And they're all, like, cowboy poets and stuff. And so and it's good. It's fun. I give this lecture. And like after the end of the first day, this guy who's, like, about 20, and he's, like, this Hank Williams guy, looking guy, like a cowboy dude. And he says, hey, you want to see Casper? Do you want to hang out and see Casper? And I said, yeah, let's do it. Let's see Casper. And so he says, hey, come on, we'll take you to this place I go and we'll see Casper. And I'm like, sure, let's do it. I love this. And so I get in the pickup truck with this guy and like my life, Travis Jr. is this right-wing Rush Limbaugh, like gun-toting, like guy, and that's I run into like when I go out across the country, I run into a lot of guys who are into comedy and a lot of guys who are into guns, like and they both kind of like Travis Jr. And so like I've had to drink a lot of tequila shots, like in across the country, and I've had to ride mechanical bulls 4 times. Because they're like, get on the bull! And I'm like, yeah, all right. You know, and that's, I'm not that guy. But like, I'm not going to say no to mechanical bull. And I'm not that good. But I say, yeah, I'm really drunk. So I'm usually much better at the mechanical bull. And so we're driving. I'm in the pickup truck. And I'm like, what's tonight going to turn into? And then I see that in his cowboy shirt, he's got a tattoo here of a high heel. Like a red pump with fishnets. And I'm like, okay, like, and so I like say what's and I like this. It's fun. I'm like, what's your tattoo? And so he takes off his shirt, and he's covered with ink. And like, and on this side, he's got like a like those red like Satan topless broads with like the Betty Page hair. Like he's got that on this side, and on this side, he's got high heel shoe fishnet, high heel shoe fishnet. So like when he goes like this, it's like the hair is right there. And I'm like, right on. Like, all right, I get it. I get where we're going. And he takes me to this bar, and it's a punk bowling alley in Casper, Wyoming. And it's black light, and it's speed metal going. And like everybody there is like fucking covered with tats and fucking crystal methed up. And like, and they're all there with their wives, with like push-up bras and like Betty Page hair, and like, and I start talking to the guy, and he's an oil rig guy. He's 22, and they all work on oil rigs, and they travel to where the oil boom is. So they go around, and so like it's this weird culture of like punk rock fucking dudes, and they work on oil rigs, and they go to Wyoming and then Texas and then Alaska, and so they're just like these fucking crazy like dudes, and they're all in punk bands, and they all know each other, and they're like, yeah, that guy's in a band, they suck, like, and that's what they all say. And I'm like, all right, right on, this is so weird. And a guy comes up to me, one of the guys, and they all know Travis Jr.'s here. So a guy comes up and says, you ever had a Jack and Coke? And I think he's making fun of me, and I'm like, yeah, I've heard of Jack and Coke, yeah. And so he gets Jack Daniels, takes out cocaine. And we all go, good. And I did 4 of those. Like, and it's fucking cocaine. So like my mouth is I can't smell my teeth. And like, and we're there, and we're listening to fucking Hank Williams III, and like bowling. And then we go out and do, we go in the truck and we do donuts in fields for a while. And it's like, but it's like, donut, 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 stop. Donut, 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 donut. And then at a certain point, a guy says, hey, you ever want to do a drug you never done before? And I said, sure, yeah, of course. I'm in Casper, Wyoming. And so I'd never done, and have since never done, salvia. Salvia fans? Not many. So we go to this place, and it's like this big, giant compound. It's like this house with like a barn, and I can't tell who lives there or anything. And I'm 40, and I was the oldest guy there by like 2 decades. And so it's like all these people running around, and it's like, you know, people making out and girls, and like and they line up to do salvia. The only guy my age is this Apache guy who's looking at me like. And so they say, who's never done it before? Travis Jr.'s never done it before. Who else has never done it before? And there was like a couple. So it's a girl in front of me, and they say, okay, this girl, you do salvia, and then Travis Jr. do it, and we'll all do salvia. And so I have no idea. I never heard of it. I have no idea what it is. And they say, no, like the Aztecs used to do it. It's cool. I'm like, great. The Aztecs used to do it. It's going to be a treat. So this girl does it. And so this girl, like she sits down and like you fill a pipe. It's like, it looks like gray cocaine is what it looks like. And you put it into a pipe and it's powder. And you go and you smoke it. And then everybody counts down from 20, 20, 19, 18, 17. And like, and so this girl takes it and they're going, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7. And this girl who smoked it hits the floor like, bam. Like she's dead. And then on the floor, she starts shaking and she goes, 7,000. 7,000. And like, I'm next. And I'm with all these dudes who are like, Travis Jr., man, doing salvia. I'm like, all right. So she, after like about 5 minutes, they hustle her off somewhere and she's fine. Not fine. She's hustled off somewhere. So I do it. And so like they fill it up. Boom. And I'm holding it in. And they're going 19, 18, 17, 16. And like my fingers start to feel weird. And then I start to think, and I was very sober because I was on a lot of cocaine. Like and I start to think like, oh, this is just a bunch of kids. It felt like nitrous. It felt like when you do a whippet. Like it felt like your fingers get tingly. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna pass out for a second. And like these kids are making a big deal of it because they're kids. And like yeah, my fingers are tingly. And then I was outside, laying outside, looking up at the sky. And there were a bunch of people around me going, it's okay, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. And I'm looking up on a ring of faces going, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. You're cool. It's okay. It's okay. And I don't remember how I got outside. And I don't, and I, like, there was a gap. And I don't, I've done a lot of drugs. I've tried everything. And, like, I've never been this fucked up in my life because I woke up with people going, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. I didn't remember where I was. I didn't remember who I was. I didn't remember what cold was. I woke up and I think, wow, they're all wearing more clothes than I am. They're wearing coats. I should be wearing a coat. I didn't wear a coat because I'm from somewhere else. I am not from here. And like over about 5 minutes, I put together, I wasn't from here. I was from somewhere else. I had come here. And I put together, and like, it sounds like the closest thing I could, it must be like being born. Of like, oh, what's going on? They have eyes just like me. I've got eyes because I can see them. Eyes can see. And that was the thought process. And I put it all together, and then they showed me, and then after like, and honestly, after 10 minutes, I was totally fine. Like, I was fine. I didn't feel like I was hungover or anything. And they showed me the video, like, one of them phoned the thing that I did. And when they showed me the phone thing, and like, so on the phone tape, I smoke it, 7, 6, 5, and I'm going like this, and I say, what are fingers for? Don't remember that. And then I walk to the door, and obviously I know what doors are. Don't know doorknob. Remember door, not doorknob. Because I look at the door and I'm like, knob. And I walk out. Don't remember that at all. And then afterwards, the guy who took me there, Corey, like the guy with the tattoo guy, like he did it next. And he was like, yeah, I mean, you get better at it. You get to be like a pro and you remember your trip and like it's great. And this guy went after like, I don't know, 7 after me, like after my recovery period. And this guy, Corey, and like he did it. Hit the floor, stood up, ran out of the house, climbed over the fence, never saw him again in my life. Thank you.
Risk, you're listening to Far Off, doing a mashup of the Beatles, the Kinks, LCD Sound System. I could swear I hear Zeppelin in there. Just a heck of a lot of Britons. It's filthy with them. Hey, you know, we teach this storytelling stuff. Myself and my colleagues who helped create the show, we've created a separate organization, a school, called the Story Studio. At thestorystudio.org. You can learn storytelling for the stage, or for more effective interpersonal communication, or, of course, for business purposes. We teach corporate workshops as well. Those stories are very different than the kinds that you hear on this podcast, so we have different workshops for different purposes. I even do one-on-one storytelling training over Skype online. So get on over to thestorystudio.org to learn more. Next up, we have another person you know from both The State and Reno 911. She's a favorite of our listeners, the wonderful Miss Carrie Kenny Silver, with a story we call Let It Burn.
Downtown!
Thank you. Thank you, guys. I have to apologize. I took a bite of a carrot when I got here and choked on it like a 42-year-old and fully lost my voice within a span of about 30 seconds. And I was at a Led Zeppelin concert. No, this is a story about the strangest thing I ever found in Nikki Glaser's vagina. No, it's not at all. You guys can't hardly see me on that side. This is my good side, too. Anyway, sometimes I talk like this. This is a story about the man who gave me my hyphen. My husband, the Jew, Stephen Silver. He is so full of love and so wonderful and has so many great ideas. This wasn't one of them. When I had first given birth to my son, I think he was about 6 months old, and I was basically just a walking milk machine for my husband. He loves milk, and I had to go to the store and give him a bit. It was every day, just if I wasn't with the boob, I was pumping the milk into this boob. No, there was none of this. That happened before, and then the baby came out. It's a whole long story. You guys are too young to know about it. But anyway, I was tired. It's having a baby sucks. And my son came out, and he was beautiful and darling and adoring and sometimes a dick, and he made me tired. So my husband said, the amazing man that he is, I want to take you somewhere to do something wonderful. I want you to let loose. I want you to relax. I want you to have fun. But I'm not going to tell you where we're going. Guys, don't do that. He said, here's the deal. You can pack a backpack. Already I'm like, fuck you. And what you can put inside it is an outfit that you might wear to a cocktail party on the moon. My husband does a lot of acid. So I do what any self-respecting woman who's headed to the moon for a cocktail party would do, and I throw my tube top and high-heeled flip-flops into a bag and my false eyelashes, and he takes me off to the airport. Well, I don't remember how he kept me from knowing where we were going, I think because I was complaining that I didn't want to be there. And we get up into the air, and at this point, I still don't know where we're going. At a certain point, the pilot says, ladies and gentlemen, in about 1 minute, we will be landing in Reno, Nevada. And I was like, you motherfucker. I get one night off, and you take me to fucking Reno, where, by the way, I had never been in the 6 years of shooting Reno. And there's a reason for that. Well, this, I thought, was my unlucky day. He says, no, just wait. Just wait, it gets better. Better than this, I thought. It did. The plane lands, we get off the plane, and he takes my hand, and he walks me across the tarmac with my high-heeled flip-flops, my tube top, and my false eyelashes. And he points to what I can only describe as a Volkswagen with a propeller on it. And we get on board. As we're flying, and I look down, and basically, yes, we were flying to the moon because we were in the middle of fucking nowhere. Now, let me tell you a little something about myself at this point in the story. I don't like the desert. I don't like surprises. I don't even like cocktail parties. But I'm trying to hold it together because he's worked really hard on whatever this is. At some point, this pilot says, look down, you'll see it in a minute. And I'm seeing nothing. I'm seeing craters and nothing. Until I see this rows and rows of something. And I don't know what it is. And he says, it's Burning Man. Now, you all don't know me very well. But I thought my husband did. And the only time that I believe we ever spoke of Burning Man was with me saying some sort of sentence like, Jesus Christ, I hope I never fucking have to go to Burning Man. Well, he misheard me. So we land. And I've got a fakest grin I've ever had on my face because I'm thinking it gets better. Something good's gonna happen. It didn't. We had to get from the airplane, the Volkswagen with the propeller on the front, to the Burning Man part with all of the people. So we took a taxi, which was an old Subaru covered in rubber chickens. Driven by a man wearing a penis on his head. So we get to, I'm wondering, what's the destination? What street are we going to stop at? I hope there's a Starbucks. And we get to a motorhome. Clearly he had a plan, there was a destination. And this is where I start to feel like an asshole. He says, welcome home. And he had sent ahead with some friends who were in for the long haul, some lunatics, a tent, some food, some water, some wine, actual glasses, and a box full of what was to be that night's outfit for me, which was Mylar, duct tape, and some glow sticks. And now I'm starting to think, now I remember why I married you. So my husband makes me a remarkable getup out of these items, and he says, let's go. The man is burning. On the way to the man burning, we make several stops, one of which is, I don't know, like a giant breast tent. And everyone's in various forms of undress. And I'm wearing a very conservative Mylar dress with duct tape and glow sticks. Because after all, I'm still a lady. And we're sitting in this boob tent or whatever it is. Something way more creative than that, I'm sure. I'll give them some credit. And everyone, you know, it's creative, it's great, I get it. I went to the Experimental Theater Wing of NYU in 1988. It was very cool. We rolled on the ground, we were naked, and we went, oh, we breathed out of our eyes. So I get it, it's awesome. And then there's this man sitting in a hammock made out of human hair. And he's about 65 years old, and he is completely naked. And I realized as he cupped his balls, this man is not creative, he's just a fucking pervert. There were a couple of them. To make matters worse, he then said, Carrie Kenny, I'm a friend of your mother. And now the wheels are turning, and I'm trying not to look at his balls as he's cupping them, just admiring the human hair hammock. And he says, don't you remember me? I helped your mother with the car care clinic for the League of Women Voters. Oh, yes. Yes, Carl, I remember you. Mother will find it funny that we met here. Shall we take a picture? No, no. That's okay. I'll just tell her about it. And then we chat for a while, because I don't want to be like a square. I'm like, it's cool. Sometimes we hang out naked in hair hammocks. Like, whatever. It's totally cool. I went to ETW. So I'm sipping on a drink that's in like a giant penis with like the, it's, you know, whatever. Fuck me. And we're discussing, like, isn't it a shame that they shut down the Waldbaums to put in the new Heyday Organic Market? Oh, my God, tell me about it. I was just thinking about that. And then we go watch the man burn. Finally, thank you. So good to see you, Carl. What a treat. I've been wondering about you all these years. And we go watch the man burn, which was exciting. It really was exciting. And, you know, then it's, like, romantic, and I'm thinking, you know what, this is kind of cool. But the coolest thing of all was that on our way back, people were stopping by, strangers saying, so, we'll meet you at 2 a.m. There's a rave on 4th and Butterfly. And we're like, yeah, cool. We love raves. 4 a.m., we're going to meet you guys at the big dance out. Yes, we'll be there. What'd you say, 4? Okay, 4 a.m. it is. All the way down, we're making plans till my husband gets to the tent. He unzips it. He says, after you. He hands me an Ambien, a sleep mask, and earplugs. And at 10 p.m. on Burning Man night, we went to sleep. Had a lovely sleep. Woke up at 7 a.m. People were still partying. We took the chicken taxi back to our Volkswagen. We flew back to Reno, and then we flew home. And I realized when I got home what an ass I had been, that I didn't trust my husband, that he knew me, and that he could do something amazing. But I did think to myself, and I kept myself from saying it out loud, next time you want to do something for me that's fun and free and relaxing, there is a Four Seasons about a mile away that you don't have to take a chicken taxi or a Volkswagen with a propeller, and I would prefer that. That's my story. Thank you.
Susan, did you hear those sounds?
I sure did, Bob, and that means it's time for a game.
One of these sounds is not like the others.
One of these sounds doesn't belong.
Can you tell which sound is not like the others?
By the time we finish our song.
You are a bitch.
A little more insanity from Jeff Barr there. And before that, we heard The Boat Song by Set Sail. Our last story comes to us from a comedian. If you haven't seen his stuff before, you definitely should get online and check him out. Mr. Sheng Wang, super smart, super funny guy. I love his style. He's at shengwangtime.com. He told the story at one of those wonderful shows we had in San Francisco. We call it Voltron Lives.
Hi, everybody. All right. My story takes place summer 2002. I was about to graduate college, and I was freaking out. I was very anxious about the need to suddenly grow up and navigate real life after school. And I didn't have a job lined up like most of my colleagues, but I did spend a ton of my parents' money earning a degree in business administration. And I learned that I think I want to be a poet. Maybe a photographer, maybe a comedian. Something, you know, more about like art and fun and not so much about business administration. I lived in this little house. It was like classic, like really carefree college lifestyle. We had five students live in there, so we called ourselves Voltron House. After the 80s cartoon where five big robotic lions would come together in a time of need and create this huge sword-wielding enforcer of universal justice. We were Voltron House because there was five of us. That was like where the similarities kind of dropped. There's five of us. We get together and we just like chill. We drink 40s on the stoop and just people watch. We grill ribeye steaks on the propane grill. And we would have kegger parties, funneling, you know, beer down our throats, all that. I was like, well, this is all going to come to an end. It's time to, you know, the fun stops now. It's time to grow up. It's time to be serious, live in the real world, do grown-up stuff. And that was killing. It was just consuming. I was just like, damn, this is... I didn't like... It was a very stressful time. And one day, my friend JP called us, and he asked if some of us wanted to join him and some of his friends on a trip to San Gregorio State Beach for a party that evening. And JP was a former resident of Voltron House. He graduated a year earlier. And he moved back home with his parents, started teaching high school students. And he was a very cool dude. He was soft-spoken. I didn't always like know exactly how I felt about things. Like, I couldn't really like judge how he was handling post-college life. And I kind of felt like he might have missed college or something. I thought, you know, all right, cool, a road trip to the beach, that's a great idea. Let me get out of my head. Let's stop worrying about the future. And by the time we piled into JP's Chevy Suburban, it was like twilight. And I, to make sure that I was going to have a really good time, I ate this pot brownie this old, crusty pot brownie that I was saving in the freezer for like a special occasion. And the brownie kicked my ass. It was so effective. I remember at one point we got to a grocery store to get some beer. And I remember telling one of my roommates, I was like, dude, I envision my body as one gigantic nostril. And I'm breathing through every single one of my pores right now. It's beautiful. So we're driving. JP's driving. I'm sitting shotgun. I'm on the front seat. There's five other guys in the back. It's a Suburban. It's a very big car. But between like the music blaring and the pot just keeping my mind busy with all these epiphanies, I didn't really have time to like. I was isolated. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I just kind of stared out my side window, looking at. We're like on a Highway 1, and I'm just staring at these like trees passing by in the darkness. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I hear a lot of screaming. People are freaking out. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but I looked in front of me and I noticed that we were in the wrong lane on this two-lane highway, and there's headlights in the distance. And I grabbed the wheel and I swerved into our lane, and I assumed that JP had fallen asleep. And I yelled, I said, JP, wake up, dude. Wake up. And I left it at that. I just thought I took care of everything. I'm gonna go back and trip out of my head some more. Not more than 2 seconds later, people are shrieking. People are freaking out again. And I look, we are once again on the wrong side of this two-lane highway. There's oncoming traffic now. And I take a good look at JP this time. His mouth is wide open. His eyes are wide open, but I don't see any pupils. I'm like, this is not right. This is not right. I grab the wheel with my right hand. With my left hand, I reach down between his legs, start to apply the brakes while trying to barely peer over the dashboard to see where I'm driving this car. And physically, it's pretty challenging. I got my core muscles engaged. I'm balancing, I'm stretching, I'm contorting my arms. Mentally, I'm still one gigantic nostril. I'm the furthest from prepared mentally you could be for this situation. And I noticed that JP's foot is on the gas. the car is still jamming down this highway. I'm on the brakes. I could hear revving of the engine and grinding of the brakes, and it's taken us a long time to slow down. And at one point, JP starts to regain some consciousness, and he says in this very confused, groggy voice, he's like, "Let me drive. Let me drive. What the F are you doing?" And when I heard that, I had a couple thoughts. When he first said, "Let me drive, let me drive," my paranoid mind was like, "Oh no, JP is not happy with his year of Real Light after college, and he's done, and he wants to check out now, and he's gonna take some of Voltron House with him." I gotta stop this car and get everybody out. And then when he said, "What the F are you doing?" I went to a whole new thought, and I started second guessing everything. I said to myself, "Yeah, what the F are you doing, dude? This is crazy." And I thought I might have hallucinated the whole situation, and I just freaked out and started driving with my arms from the passenger seat for no reason. At that point, the car, we finally stopped. When I threw it into park, I grabbed the keys. Everybody jumped out except for JP. He had no idea what happened. And what was supposed to be just like this super relaxing trip to the beach to forget about all the woes of whatever real life, impending real life, came to this. It was six young men on the shoulder of this dark highway just hugging each other and crying. Just happy to be not dead. Calmed down a little bit. Checking with JP. He's fine. He thought he just fell asleep. Unsure. We didn't know what to do. We're just like, we just got back in the car, piled back in. My other roommate got behind the wheel, and we went to the beach. Because after that, we're just like, we have to unwind now. We have to drink some beers by the ocean. And it was a beautiful kind of like decompression that night. The next day, I called up JP and I said, "Hey man," I told him what happened, and I said, "You might want to go see a doctor, talk to him about that." And he got diagnosed soon thereafter with a complex partial seizures, which is this condition that if left untreated would just continue to lead to things that happened that night. And it was something he was gonna have to live with. You know, but he was just not gonna stop him from living. And I guess, like, at that point, I learned that, you know, that's kind of a big part of what growing up is all about. You just deal, and then you move on. And I also learned that pot makes near-death experiences feel a lot more nearer. Thank you guys very much.
That's it for this time around, folks. Don't forget that Twitter campaign, and listen, if you don't have a Twitter account, just go to risk.com rolling-stone-show.com. On our front page, we also include the emails of Rolling Stone, Entertainment Weekly, and the New York Times. We want everyone to be tweeting or emailing them, telling them, hey, you've got to review Risk. This show deserves a hell of a lot more attention than it's gotten so far. It's nobody's fault. We just got to get the word out. So help us out with that. Everything you need to know is on our front page at risk-show.com. On Twitter and Facebook, we're at Risk Show. You can find our all-star episodes in our shop with Sarah Silverman, Mark Maron, Kevin Nealon, Adam McKay, Nick Swartzen, Samantha Bee, Lisa Lampanelli, Michael Ian Black, Paul F. Tompkins, and many more. If you'd like to advertise with us, please write to Chris at risk-show.com. Want to bring a Risk live show to your hometown or college? Write to tour at risk-show.com. And don't forget to look for the little guy filling the gas tank. If you scroll down on the right side, the front page of our website, risk-show.com, that's where the Keep Risk Running buttons are, where you can donate to us. You donate $50, you'll get a Risk t-shirt signed by me. The only thing left to say is, folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
You guess this sound.
Shut up, little man.
Is not like the others.
Then
I will kill you in one fucking minute. Not 1 minute. 30 seconds. Yeah, you cock-sucking fucking piece of shit.